Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Stuart Acuff with Utility Workers Union of America, asking you to tune in every time you can to Bob Carson's Carson's Corner, one of the best pro-labor shows in America. We love it at Utility Workers. We love it across the AFL-CIO, and we're grateful to Bob for coming on and holding up our issues and holding up our principles and values.
I'm Andrew Craig. I'm an investigative reporter and attorney based in Washington, and I've the author of Presidential Puppetry, Obama, Romney, and Their Masters. And I want to encourage everyone to support, listen to, and talk about the Carson's Corner show in New Jersey, which is a pioneering, courageous, and apt voice for progressives in New Jersey that I first came to know in 2009 when he was the pioneering and virtually unique media outlet willing to take on Chris Christie, dig deep, and look at how he had come to power and how he was misusing it. And 4 years, 5 years later here, that's all come to pass.
Hi, this is David K. Johnston, and you're listening to Carson's Corner with Bob Carson.
This is Lamar Waldron, the author of Ultimate Sacrifice and Legacy of Secrecy, those two books, the latter of which will become a movie produced and starring Leonardo DiCaprio in 2013, and you are listening to Carson's Corner with Bob Carson on Underground Progressive Radio.
This is Les Leopold, the author of How to Make $1 Million an Hour, and I just want to tell you that you'll get a rich and rewarding experience by listening to Carson's Corner.
This is Greg Palast, reporter for BBC Television and Democracy Now, and author of the new book Vultures Picnic, In Pursuit of Petroleum Pigs, Power Pirates, and High Finance Carnivores, and you're listening to Carson's Corner on 5:30 a.m. Underground Progressive Radio, radio for the 99%. Help us occupy the airwaves and support Carson's Corner and support 5:30 Underground Progressive Radio.
Hi, this is Frank Schaefer, author of Sex, Mom, and God. You're listening to Carson's Corner, a show I enjoy. I hope you enjoy it, too. I encourage you to listen.
Welcome live to another edition of Carson's Corner on Blog Talk Radio and in conjunction with the CommonsProjectNetwork.com. My name is Bob Carson. Pleased to be with you here this, Wednesday evening? Yeah, I'm losing track of the days here, folks. I've been on vacation from work since Sunday, and actually, after this, in the second hour, I'm going to play you a discussion I had with Dan Quinn. This was a political discussion with our good friend Dan Quinn, who really needs no introduction to people that have listened to this show. But let me just tell you, as that interview and as that update is playing, I am going to be on my way to Atlanta, Georgia. Literally, I'm going to be in the car. I'm going to be driving or attempting to drive to Atlanta, Georgia, which is 856 miles away from where I'm at now in my decrepit car, okay? I don't want to tell you all the details surrounding the demise of my car because they're pretty bad, but I have no choice. I basically, you know, have to go down there for my school residency, and when you're trying to get a certain college degree, there is a residency requirement oftentimes. Some universities do not have residence requirements. There is also a dissertation involved and an examination. So it's sort of a three-prong process, if you will, in an effort to you know, get the highest form of education that you can get to become a doctor of education or any other field. It's something that less than 2% of the population actually has done. Typically, people that have this level of education are not contradictions like myself in the sense that they earn more money. Okay, they're not living in almost abject poverty as I am. So Bob Carson is an outlier here nonetheless. But, you know, my journey began in 2007. I've been going to school full-time ever since then. And, you know, you could say I'm going to school for a variety of different reasons to help me with myself in terms of self-esteem, to help me navigate through the horrendous times that we are experiencing here in the United States of America. It is a bad time to be an American. It is a bad time to raise a child in this climate, and there's just no question about it. And we talk about this on this show every single week. We just bang home the same message. And so, you know, it's my escape, so to speak, from the reality of our current form of capitalism right now, the reality of our system of labor control, the reality of a political and economic system that has been captured by the elites in our society. And the media represents elite interests. I mean, I could just go on and on and on. You know, they say that fascism exists with the overthrow of our government. Well, you know what? I would submit to you, ladies and gentlemen, that our government has been overthrown not by any type of military coup or violent coup, as was attempted during the days of FDR with the business plot. You can read all about that in Tom Hartman's new book, Crash of 2016. But, you know, I mean, it's nonetheless important to me that I get this and hope for the opportunity for a greater earning potential down the road, which is the case with individuals that have a high level of college degrees. Now, keep in mind, this is the United States of America now. You know, we live in a country where employers, the major sectors of our economy, have a ridiculous amount of power and can manipulate the supply and demand of a labor market, just like the banks can manipulate the supply and demand of the credit market and the housing market and, you know, fill in the blank. Well, this is where we're at here in America, so it's not uncommon to have people with very high levels of education that are doing jobs that are far beneath their education. In fact, you know, I would venture to say that probably most Americans are working jobs that have nothing to do with their field of education. It's unfortunately become a sad reality in America. And, you know, if you look at those that are actually lucky enough to work in the field that they went to college for, you'll see most likely that other factors came into play, like, you know, family prestige, you know, economic class, luck, looks, timing. Everything has to do with, you know, why certain people, you know, can actually work in the industry that they go to school for and be successful. I mean, think about how many people aspire to be doctors or, you know, stockbrokers or lawyers. And the reality is that very few people that actually go to school for these professions wind up working in these professions. I mean, it's like that too with the police department. You know, if you look at, you know, for example, the New York City Police Department not too long ago administered their civil service test. And I was reading that something like, you know, less than, I think it was 6%, it may even be lesser than that, I'm just going off the top of my memory here, who took the test actually became police officers. Now, that's pretty sad. I mean, that just really is. And so, you know, chances are that people that want to become a police officer, a New York City police officer, where the demand is extremely high for this type of job, as it is in many public sectors. I mean, post office, teachers, you know, fill in the blank, there's always going to be more people, a lot more people looking for jobs than available jobs, and that puts a downward pressure on wages, and it creates an ultra-competitive market that ultimately benefits those that own the means of production. And it's unfortunate, but this is where we're at here in America. So wish me luck. You know, I have a bad transmission on this car, and so it is entirely possible that I could break down on the way there or back from Atlanta, in which case I'd really be screwed. You know, but this is what I have to do because I was going to rent the car, but some of the requirements to rent the car are rather onerous. Okay, I just don't have a lot of money and a lot of credit, so therefore my options are limited. And you know, this is the risk that I have to take. It's unfortunate, but you know, this is what I got to do. 347-326-9749. 347-326-9749. We got a lot to talk about here today, and like I said, in the second hour, we're going to be giving you an update with Dan Quinn, a nice political discussion that we had with Dan Quinn, and so people will want to stay tuned for that. You've got the situation in Ukraine that's been unraveling now for the last 5 or 6 days, and I'll be the first to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, I am not an authority on this topic, okay? I'm just basically a layman out there who has, you know, an opinion just like anything else. I mean, I feel more comfortable talking about issues concerning the economy and labor and capitalism and taxes and you know, I guess current events like the Iraq and Afghanistan war and war on terrorism, but when it comes to another region of the world, I'm not necessarily comfortable with talking about this. But you know what? Noam Chomsky had a really good point in his book, Manufacturing Consent, when he said that basically the individuals that are supposed to be authority figures on these topics, the you know, new shapers, the individuals, the individuals that you see on the corporate media or you hear on corporate media or you read, these individuals have by and large an adolescence command of these events, okay? There's really no expert in any field that you see on television. And so that's very, very important. It's just a matter of speaking in a way that sounds professional and sounds fluent and could make it's almost an illusion, you know, a punditry to a certain extent is almost an illusion. And so I think what it looks like to me is happening here is that there are interests in America. There are forces. There's the military-industrial complex, which Dwight Eisenhower warned us about in his farewell address in 1961. There's the pharmaceutical-industrial complex, there's the health care industrial complex, there's all these different corporate sectors that do not rely on the free market. They rely on a wasteful and inefficient system to line their pockets. I mean, you know, all you have to do is just look at the military industrial complex and look at our wars in Iraq and Afghanistan and, you know, a documentary that Robert Greenwald put out, I think it was called War Profiteers or Iraq for Sale, something to that effect, to understand the extreme inefficiency that leads to record profits of these companies, where you have companies like Halliburton, I'm not sure, I think what are they, KBR now, that you know is notorious for burning tanker trucks in Iraq because the government is going to give them money for a brand new tanker truck. So it makes sense to burn these tanker trucks, these oil tankers, rather than fix them because, you know, they're getting money from the government, where you see them charge the government $100, $200 for a hammer. And now, you know, in countries like Iraq and Afghanistan, we had more contractors than we did soldiers in these countries, because these contractors are, you know, essentially billing the government at whatever rate they want to, and the procurement process is a complete disaster. And so, you know, as a result, now the military budget has just exceeded belief. I mean, you know, Bernie Sanders is on record as saying since 1997, the military budget tripled. You know, back in the mid-90s, it was something like $250, $270 billion. It's at least doubled since then, you know, depending upon what numbers you look at. And so now we're at a point where out of every federal tax dollar you spend, 50 cents of that tax dollar is going to go towards military spending. And the sad part about this is that most Americans, I would venture to say, probably don't even know this. Most Americans would be surprised when you tell them that, you know, most of their tax dollars are going towards military spending. They would think it would be going to welfare spending, the way that welfare and welfare recipients and unemployment benefits, which, by the way, someone making $50,000 a year is paying about $22 a year for unemployment insurance, compared to the thousands of dollars they're spending on bank subsidies, farming subsidies, and business subsidies at the state level. And we can go into that on with much more detail. But, you know, so it's not seen. You know, people can't understand how the wasteful and inefficient system within the military-industrial complex, this system of corporate welfare, of, you know, socialized, welfare to these corporations is just destroying us. And you have real forces in the military-industrial complex and these individuals that essentially control our government, control both political parties, that are beating the drums of war again. You know, it happened last year with Syria, where there was a real good chance that we were going to go into Syria based on, you know, the chemical weapons use of Assad, the Assad regime. And the people kind of, Obama was all set for this. And the people kind of rebelled and said, no, we're not going to do this. And, you know, that situation is what it is now. But you have this constant, you know, beating of drums to go to war, and this real willingness to return to the 1980s with the Cold War and rampant military spending that has really made it easier to structurally adjust the United States of America, because that is what this is all about. Okay, it is all about spending money on the military, as Ronald Reagan did. Ronald Reagan tripled the national debt when he was in office. You know, the military spending, again, was through the roof. And there was a real arms race. And as a result of that, we accumulated a massive amount of debt that to this day, we have not paid off that debt. But what happens is this gives the elites the opportunity to structurally adjust America to pay for the wars that these individuals pushed for, profited from, and America ends up turning it into a more and more, you know, a regressive country, which is why, you know, at the top of the show I said that it's a bad time to be an American. This country is in a state of perpetual decline. And it is precisely because, in large part, due to our military spending and due to the waste and inefficiency inherent in the system, to the point where you have the Pentagon budget missing $1 trillion. Now, could you imagine, I mean, if there was a certain amount of fraud in programs like unemployment or food stamps, could you imagine what the reaction would be? If there was, you know, $1 billion or $2 billion made or paid to fraudulent unemployment claims or fraudulent, you know, welfare claims. I mean, it would be nonstop wall-to-wall coverage. But because the corporations that make up our media represent elite interests and represent interests that are about going to war, we don't get a real analysis on this. We don't get coverage on this. Instead, we get an inherent contradiction, which, you know, I always say we should just avoid the corporate media altogether. But, you know, now we're seeing this again, and unfortunately, it's not going to stop. And these people get their way, and until we wind up spending more money on military, we wind up cutting social programs, structurally adjusting America to become even more repressive. And, you know, ultimately, we are closer to the libertarian paradise that these individuals want America to be. Now, what it looks like Putin is doing is it looks like he's doing what we've done in this country, you know, for our entire history. It looks like he is preventing a former Soviet republic from engaging in Western-style neoliberal economic policies. And it looks like, you know, he would be, I guess, you know, exercising under the domino theory, which says that we have to stop certain economic systems from developing in neighboring countries, or else these economic systems will actually infect our country. And that's what it looks like he's doing, because of course you had the EU trade deal that was strongly rejected in the Ukraine by, you know, the former leader whose name escapes right now, that was a Russia puppet. But Russia and the interests surrounding Vladimir Putin do not want to engage in free trade, which I think is a good thing. You know, if it were up to me, I would get United States out of our trade agreements, because it's really hurt this country immeasurably. And we continue down this path. And you look at the protesters, the Ukrainian protesters, which some have compared them to the Tea Party here in the United States. And it just seems to me that, you know, we're being told that Putin is a tyrant and Putin is this and Putin is that, when in actuality, you know, Vladimir Putin is doing entire history. And, you know, Vladimir Putin, to describe him as an enemy to the United States is kind of weird, considering our history with Russia over the past, you know, 10, 20 years, where they have helped us out tremendously in certain situations. With the Boston bombing, they helped us out in Syria, and other situations too. So it's like, I'm not buying this. I'm really not. And you know what? I think that this country, it should be even illegal to talk about going to war in America. We should have to go to Congress to get a declaration to even discuss the possibility of war, because, you know, this country is seemingly always in a perpetual state of war that leaves us poor and the world in chaos, and we just never seem to learn from our mistakes, because ultimately those that are in power are not accountable to you and I. And so, you know, this is why we keep on, you know, falling for weapons of mass destruction, the Gulf of Tonkin, that. What's going to be the next thing? And we're going to say that, you know, Vladimir Putin, you know, fired on one of our airplanes. He approached one of the UN convoys, and this is the justification for war. When is enough enough? I mean, Jesus. United States of America has more military bases on more countries than any other nation. You know, we have, we comprise 5% of the world's population, and yet, you know, a majority of military spending. We spend more money on every industrialized country on military spending. And, you know, we just simply cannot police every region of the world. It's made us weaker here at home. And so I'm just sick and tired of this. I really am. Because the individuals that are really pushing for this war, the individuals that ultimately want to take us to war, they've never fought before. They don't know what it's like. It's easy for them to sit in their, you know, comfortable chairs in Washington, D.C., and talk about sending children to war because they understand that their children are not going to have to serve in this war. That it is a situation that doesn't involve them, so to speak. And it's really terrible. I mean, President Obama, who's been very aggressive on the foreign policy front, he's done things that really has expanded this so-called war on terrorism. I mean, to the point where the United States has killed its own citizens. Anwar al-Awlaki, or is that his name? Awlaki, the radical cleric that defected and was killed. His son was killed in countries that, you know, have not declared war on the United States. And, you know, we've sponsored raids, military raids, bombings in many countries without any type of UN approval, without any type of international consensus. And, you know, so President Obama has been Bush-like and more. And this is the so-called peace candidate, you know. And so it just, excuse me, it really shows you just where we're at here in America. But, you know, I'm tired of this. I know you're tired of this. And, you know, war, we should not ever have to go to war. I haven't seen any reason for us to go to war since World War II. Okay, Dick Gregory, the famous comedian, said, if America's way of life is so good, other people will steal it. You don't have to go and impose it on them. And he's absolutely correct. Our military involvement all over the globe has been an absolute disaster. And it has served to weaken us here in the United States. And that's the point, is that, you know, the actions of our military, the initiatives are not designed to make us stronger. They're not designed to secure us from any threat, because by and large, a threat from a foreign invader doesn't exist. We're spending billions of dollars on military defense systems, on military hardware to fight a phantom. Our country is not going to be militarily invaded. We're going to be economically invaded, in part because of our defense spending. And that's the, you know, important thing here to really look at, is that, you know, our military, the role of our military has changed ever since the role of our government has changed. You know, the government is no longer of and for the people. It is of and for the corporations. And the objectives of these corporations have nothing to do with democracy, have nothing to do with defending our nation. It has to do with expanding our empire and expanding the compound growth of capitalism. And so, you know, this really all fits into what we're seeing now here with the Ukraine. I don't buy the notion that Vladimir Putin is our enemy and that we have to, you know, relive the Cold War and you know, we just have to ramp up this military spending and get ready, because it's just absolutely nonsense. It really is. I like to think of an international free market You know, if somebody is acting so egregiously and against the interests of the world, then the free market will take place, meaning a consensus among nations that will alienate this country, and they'll have to correct themselves. They will marginalize themselves. You know, you could say that with Russia, too. Kick Russia out of the G8, although, you know, it'll be debated as to whether or not Vladimir Putin even cares about that. You can eliminate him from the UN, okay, and that will alienate him. That'll put economic pressure on him if he's acting in a way that you know, circumvents, I guess, any type of democracy, or, you know, if he starts to invade other countries as he's done in 2008 with Georgia and whatnot, his actions will draw a consensus which will marginalize him. And that's, you know, what we have to, you know, just let happen. You know, it's not us to send, not up to us to send money, to do this, to do that. No, that's just absolutely ridiculous. We can't even spend money here in the United States on bridges, on roads, on our crumbling infrastructure. We're going to spend $1 billion, $15 billion, whatever, helping another country. It doesn't make any sense to the American people. It really doesn't. But that's how you deal with, you know, so-called rogue nations. You let the international community deal with them. You don't do what George W. Bush did in 2003 when he decided to invade Iraq, which was against the international community and polarized the world and subsequently created a disaster in Iraq. You don't do that, okay? But, you know, this country has a short attention span, and we're doomed to failure because we keep on repeating the same mistakes. It's either reform or revolution, and I think this nation can reform itself. I really don't. So that's my take on the issue in Ukraine, the situation. Okay, I just think it's really, really unfortunate. It really is. What else we got going on here? You know, I hate to say it, but nothing is going on. The political landscape is still the same as it was, you know, all these years. It's no different now. There really is no life in the countering groups out there. There's no activity. I mean, you'll have some rallies here and there. You'll have some surface political battles, which I call them, which, you know, the fight for this, the fight for that, the fight for, you know, not to cut benefits, welfare benefits, the fight to allow gay marriage. But these are by and large surface issues. They have nothing to do with changing the structure of our economic system and our political system, and any such attempt doesn't seem likely at all in the future. So, you know, you've got President Obama trying to push this jobs package, right, this infrastructure spending, but that is completely dead because we have an election that's coming up. You have the Republicans in the House that voted to repeal the Affordable Care Act, the 50th time that they voted to do so. And all of this, it really doesn't matter because, as I said, nothing is going to get done. The country is continuing to move in the same direction, which we've noted before. We continue to move in the direction of taxes on corporations, a system of increasing labor control, labor marginalization, where when it comes to workers' rights in America, we are moving in a very regressive direction. This is a topic of discussion that we featured recently here on Carson's Corner when we invited Joe Burns on the program a few years ago, and we replayed that interview. You know, Joe Burns who's a labor historian, labor lawyer, and someone who's really been involved with the labor movement for a long time, highlights the fact that, you know, trade unionism back in the 30s faced much more difficult opposition in many ways than we have here in the United States. Okay, there was a real solidarity back then among workers. And, you know, now in today's society, the strike is almost non-existent. There's almost no such thing as a strike. And if there is a strike, if workers are lucky enough to strike, they can't strike across different industries. They're limited to what type of strike they can use. And they're going to get the corporate media and the press against them, you know, because we understand that everything in America is through the lens of big business. Everything is through the lens of, you know, the 1% that actually owns 50% of stocks and you know, almost all of the media landscape and the investment and the yardsticks in which we measure our society, okay? But, you know, in the 1930s, you had double-digit employment. You had massive corporations dispersing spies in the workplace. And, you know, still during this time, there was an alternative. There was a worker-driven alternative that went outside the law to embrace the concept of solidarity. You see, here in the United States of America, there's almost no concept of solidarity anymore. There isn't. I mean, you know, think about your workplace, right? Think about the times where you've had discussions that maybe border on political discussions, where you hear people, you know, railing against welfare recipients and this Tea Party mantra of, you know, it's generational welfare, and it's the fact that we're a lazy society that has, you know, caused the problems that we face right now, and it's, you know, I'm working so somebody doesn't have to, and there's no, you know, kinship with workers, at least to a certain degree. There's no understanding that, you know what, individuals are on welfare, individual initiative, but because of our trade policies, because of our tax policies, because of our constant attack on the small remaining social safety net that we have in America relative to other countries, and the avenue that people like this, the Tea Party individuals and the Fox Newsers and others provide to allow that to happen. There is, you know, the media and the elite interests keep us divided, right? And what we've had, you know, in this country since 1935 is the 1935, the National Labor Relations Act, or the Wagner Act, passed, and this established the right to unionize in America. It was a victory for workers, and although employers, as Joe Burns pointed out in the show, didn't follow it, workers rallied. Workers understood that, you know, we have to change the dynamic. We have to get out there, and we have to become active. And they made the employers follow it. But what has happened since then is the corporations and the very wealthy, they have attacked the National Labor Relations Act. A number of amendments were introduced that changed the rules of the game, because the corporations realize that if they can change the rules of the game, they can win every time. And so, you know, even if you have a perfect reform of a law, even if tomorrow we were to pass a law that increased the rate of unionization in America, corporations, because of their very nature, because of the nature of our system, would be able to pick at this law, change the rules of the game, because workers can't. Workers can't change the rules of the game. But employers and capitalists, they can. And so you'd have a series of interpretations. You would have other laws passed that are going to be protected by corporate interests that are going to restrict the mobility of workers. And that's what you had. In 1947, you had the passage of Taft-Hartley, which outlawed solidarity. And, you know, from this, you have the scabs go in and products go out mantra. And workers ever since, as Joe Burns pointed out on the show, have been fighting with their hands behind their back. Okay? You know, this is part because of our own doing, because we have allowed this current system to take place. We have consented to this system by voting, by supporting Democrats like President Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, who in no way, shape, or form are friends of the labor movement. These are individuals that really mark the new face of the Democratic Party. In fact, I'm reading a book by David Harvey right now that talks about the state finance nexus and the changing of power existed during the Clinton administration when Bill Clinton said to the effect of, "Wow, my reelection depends on the stock market and bond trading." And the powers that be said, "Yes, it does." And from that point on, it marked a new face of the Democratic Party that is going to be, you know, responsive to the needs of big business and the stock market and so on and so forth. And it's going to exist to control labor. And that's what we've had. And all the while, you know, still people have supported this. You know, Democrats have they turned out to vote for Clinton. They turned out to vote for President Obama, ignoring these two individuals have done. Forget about their words. Now, President Obama will sound very, very populist. Now, this is a guy who, you know, talks about creating jobs for the middle class, right, whatever that means, and talks about, you know, income inequality and this and that. And, you know, on the other hand, he's pushing free trade agreements that would accelerate income inequality and ship jobs overseas. He's talking about, raising the minimum wage and this and that. But yet, you know, at every chance he's got, he's supported cutting from our federal budget. In fact, it was President Obama that established the model for austerity. So, you know, we find ourselves in a situation we're in because of a corporate onslaught and because of our, you know, unwillingness to have any type of guts, okay, to realize in this country that labor law is fundamentally anti-worker, okay? Corporations don't give a damn about human life. They don't give a damn about logic and reason. All they care about is profit. They are monsters trying to gobble up as much profit as they can without any regard for the consequences. You know, if you speak of the consequences of, you know, the system developed by Walmart and other giant, you know, corporate interests, then, you know, you're advancing communism. You're, you know, against the free market. You're, you know, it's an either or proposition here. And they're not going to change unless we change them. You know, they're not going to change unless we fundamentally change the system. You know, and we could do that through, I would argue at this point, a revolution. That's what we need, is a complete revolution of thought, a complete revolution of ideas, going outside the traditional avenues for change, and really, you know, putting it into action. But we're nowhere near that. I mean, we are absolutely nowhere near that. There is no sign whatsoever. In fact, the only anti-capitalist movement out there, if you want to call it that, would be the environmental movement. You know, I mean, environmental groups are aligned with our interests, and that's where you could see some sort of movement, but everything else is dead. As Ralph Nader has said, the countervailing institutions in America are being withered away. There's almost no countervailing institutions from a complete corporate state. Unions gone practically. Consumer advocacy groups gone. Regulatory agencies captured. Elections nullified, to where, you know, you had a Democrat in the office for the last 6 years and nothing has been done. We continue to move in their direction because that's how the system is set up, you know. And so it's really, really getting worse. It really is. But we have to, you know, there was a point in America where the labor movement, through the Clayton Act, actually got the notion that human labor is not a commodity into law. And that is a very, very important statement. Human labor is not a commodity. It is not something to be discarded by employers because it involves humans. It involves sacrifices that we endure on a daily basis and should not, you know, take it for granted. And I think, you know, that is part of the problem, is that we've accepted their assumptions. You know, we've accepted this idea that, you know, the mobility of capital is more important than the mobility of workers, and, you know, we're lucky to have a job, and you know, we have to keep up with the market for the times. Well, you know what? It's illegitimate because the market is corrupted. Okay, these employers have the ability to dictate our circumstances. It's not a fair battle. And so, you know, as long as we don't readjust our thinking, we continue to, you know, operate under the same assumptions, then nothing is going to change. It really isn't. We're going to take a brief time out here. We'll be right back here on Carson's Corner in conjunction with the CommonsProjectNetwork.com. Keep it right here, folks.
This is an important message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. As the cleanup process begins after a natural disaster, there may be areas of flooding. Constantly watch your children to prevent playing in or around water. It doesn't take long, and it doesn't take much water for young children to drown. In many cases, children who drowned had been out of sight less than 5 minutes and were in the care of one or both parents at the time. To learn more, call CDC at 800-CDC-INFO.
Get over here!
Hi, this is Frank Schaefer, author of Sex, Mom, and God. You're listening to Carson's Corner, a show I enjoy. I hope you enjoy it, too. I encourage you to listen.
Now, we're back here on Carson's Corner, in conjunction with the CommonsProjectNetwork.com. I can't believe that in about 8 minutes or so, I'm going to be in the car on my way to Atlanta, the start of a 15-hour drive. That's pretty offensive. But you know what? I've driven to California before. And so this is not something that I am not used to, okay? I got to be honest with you. But listen, just do me a favor. Keep in contact. Keep updated on my Facebook page. If you go to facebook.com/BobCarsonMMA, you can follow me. You know, hopefully nothing will happen to me and I'll make it okay. But you never know. You really don't. There was a Klan rally in Atlanta, Georgia. Actually, a couple of days ago, I believe. I hope I won't have to run into any Klansmen there, okay? That'll be just something else. It's amazing that this is still happening in the South. But you know what? Recently, we heard the exploits of Ted Nugent, right? The racist, right-wing, washed-up rocker who the media likes to marginalize as being some fringe element and some, oh, look, you know, it's so, he just represents the fringe. No! Ted Nugent does not represent the fringe, ladies and gentlemen. Ted Nugent and his sentiments represent, I would argue, the mainstream ideas of Tea Party, the mainstream sentiments of Tea Party individuals. And this has been empirically proven in the book The Crashing of the Tea Party, Crashing the Tea Party by Paul Street and Anthony DiMaggio. It took a look at the polls that exist on the Tea Party and how these individuals have racist views of African Americans. They have negative views of immigrants in general, and this is reflected in, you know, their attitude, in their comments, in their signs at rallies, in their internet searches. It is reflected in their dissent, the type of dissent that has been President Obama. Okay? So, you know, the media likes to sort of gloss over this and legitimize these people. But they don't want to acknowledge that the racism within the Tea Party is not on the outer fringes of the group. It is the group. It's the very core of the group. It was Malcolm X that said that, you know, the South doesn't stop at the South. The South exists, you know, once you cross the Canadian border. It's all over the place. That's true. You know, it's not just in the South that this takes place. It's at your place of business. It's in your community. It's everywhere, okay? We still definitely have problems with race, and that's never going to change. The only thing that's going to change is the demographics that could possibly even it out to the point where you have a Republican Party that can no longer win elections despite gerrymandering and voter repression efforts that relies exclusively on the white vote, okay? And that's what we're seeing right now in states like Texas and Arizona and other states where the Hispanic population is neutralizing the white population. And you know, I've seen some estimates that say that in 2049, you're going to have a majority-minority country. And that, I think, would be a great thing. It really would be, because then we can have, well, not that there are any legitimate political parties, but then we can have an electorate that doesn't just revolve around one race and just doesn't just give all the power to disenfranchised white voters who have always had the power in our society. Now, keep in mind, when Ronald Reagan was elected, 85% to 90% of the vote in America was white, and Reagan ran exclusively to disenfranchised white voters. He really lamented the black folk. Okay, he started his bid for the presidency in Philadelphia, Mississippi, giving a speech about state rights, you can look at the history of Ronald Reagan to understand where Reagan was coming from, and ultimately the sentiments that he expressed, and how he was appealing to frustrated white voters. And this exists today. I mean, it's still to this day. Oh, Rob, we elected a black president. Haven't we moved on? No, we haven't moved on. You know, white America didn't elect President Obama. Okay, President Obama lost every white demographic in both elections. Okay, and still, you know, look at Fox News, look at right-wing talk radio, and the racial outrage on the part of these entities, and the constant, you know, association of minorities with crimes and certain cultures. I mean, how many times do you hear Bill O'Reilly talking about the gangster culture and this and that? Do we ever say that about white people? You know, I mean, do we ever say, associate an entire race of people with a culture? It's just disgusting, you know. But that's where we're at in America, and it's important to realize that this is not fringe behavior. This is, you know, where a majority of white Americans are at. And I would submit to you that if you look at something like the situation in New York with Bill de Blasio and his, his election and everything, the sheer hatred for Bill de Blasio exists not only because he is a seemingly progressive candidate who, you know, at least with certain policies and certain appointments, is trying to change the nature of business in New York City. It's not only that, it's, you know, he has a black wife and black children. And I'm telling you that the elites in America are uncomfortable with that. All right. Without further ado, I'm going to play you my update I conducted with Dan Quinn. Now, keep in mind, I'm going to be out. I'm going to be in Atlanta, Georgia, for the next 4 or 5 days. So you won't be hearing any more Carson's Corner shows. But keep in contact with me. You could follow me on Carson's Corner, the Facebook page at Carson's Corner 13. Like the Facebook page. Friend me on Facebook at facebook.com/BobCarsonMMA. And follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/BobCarsonMMA. You'll notice that this update with Dan Quinn is much better. I can now call Dan on a payphone and record via Skype, so it sounds a little better. So until next time, ladies and gentlemen, show some respect.
Well, Dan?
Bob Carson.
Hey, what's up, man? It's good to speak to you.
Good to hear your voice, brother.
You sound much better, much clearer than when you would call my cell phone and put on speaker. We're recording now because I called you back via Skype. And anytime I call via Skype, it automatically records. And I'm calling you from my bedroom now, so it's much more comfortable for me.
Cool, cool. So are you going to post this?
Yeah, absolutely, if you want.
All right. Well, we'll see how it goes. Yeah. Haven't really thought about what I wanted to talk about, but I'll tell you what. I was watching the Academy Awards last night. Did you see those?
No.
Bill Murray. I love Bill Murray. Okay. He looked tore back. Old, and they had a session of all these people that have died, all these famous people, and I'm wondering, down the road, Bob Carson, do you think that when America finds out that they've been paying $4 a gallon for flammable water and a suite that cures was held back by the government, do you think the American people might actually get really pissed off against the United States government?
They should.
Yeah, well, there you go. Say what, have you Googled petroleum gasoline's chemical composition since I talked to you?
Yes.
Okay. You've seen, what is it, H14 plus C6, is that it?
Oh, I'm Googling it right now again. What was that again, Dan, petroleum?
The chemical composition of petroleum gasoline, and there's a lot of hydrogen in there, you know, the majority of America thinking that petrol or fossil fuel is what powers cars, planes, whatever, when in fact everything is powered by hydrogen. And on that topic, I was listening to a PhD on NPR radio. This is a couple years ago, obviously, since I've been locked up. But he actually said, quote unquote, that nuclear power is a really expensive way to boil water into electricity. And I heard that and I was like, oh my God, it's all about water, you know? And if you think about it, Bob, I mean, we've gone over this again, but I want to pound it into people's brains that are listening. And, you know, what they should do is call. There's a lot of people out there that have nothing better to do but listen to this and fuck around on the computer. They have a lot of free time. Agreed?
Yep.
Okay. What they should do is contact some of their fucking favorite celebrities and just say, hey, you know what? Stevia, you know, drink sweet water, you know, lose weight, look younger, you know. It's the key to what will eventually become the fountain of youth. But for people to, you know, start thinking about, if they pour, have you ever used liquid Drano, Bob?
Yes.
Okay, so for every gallon of liquid Drano that's poured down the sink of the drain times 300 million people times the world, eventually that's just going to add up and water levels will start increasing, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Well, for every gallon that's poured down the sink of the drain, we're burning gallons in internal combustion engines. And, you know, there's a lot of hydrogen in petroleum gasoline. It's fried. We fry it into smog. It's gone. It's not an even return. And people are getting sicker and sicker and sicker. I mean, don't you think that the cases of cancer and people getting sicker are spiking? Am I wrong about that or am I right?
No, you're right.
Yeah, you know, things are getting worse. And the fact is, you know, hydrogen doesn't grow on trees, brother. Hydrogen does not grow on trees. Hydrogen, as a matter of fact, if you suffocate red algae, I Googled this, and I put a, it's amazing, but you can ask the computer, you know, and it'll come up with the answer.
Yep.
But I said, well, I asked, you know, is there anything that creates hydrogen? And it led me to suffocating red algae. And what we should be doing, you know, people all around the United States and all around the world is be given, you know, red algae in some kind of container where you start suffocating it, you know, it starts producing hydrogen and manufacturing for water. Eventually we can replace everything that's been lost. But, you know, with all the global warming, okay, have you noticed, okay, do you get Popular Science by any chance?
Do I get what?
The magazine Popular Science. Probably not.
I don't subscribe to it, no.
Okay, well, I started subscribing when I was locked up, and they had an article in one of the magazines and said that Greenland, where most, I mean, tons and tons of, you know, like Antarctica and Greenland, are, you know, 75% of all the snow and all the ice is, like, melted back into water.
Yep.
You realize that, I mean, the toll that grew over on the toll that global warming has taken?
Oh, it's there's more carbon dioxide in the air now than ever. I mean, 250 billion particles or something to that effect. It's we're killing ourselves, Dan.
Yeah. You know, this might sound crazy, and since I'm in a nut house, but I'll tell you what, the doctor, when he saw me after my initial intake interview, said it didn't sound like I needed to be here, and so it would probably be a quick exit, you know, back to Sacramento.
Well, how is it, Dan? Because you're in Napa Valley Hospital, right?
Yeah, Napa State Hospital. And it's a lot better than being locked up in jail. I'll tell you that. The food's a lot better. I'm not locked up. Just got done playing a game of checkers. There's some really good guys here. There's some people that definitely need to be here. There's some people that are probably trying to be here to get out of, like, extended long-term sentences.
Yeah.
And then there's some people that are here because the system, all right, is using this to, like, cover asses, you know. And
well, Dan, I spoke to your mother and a couple, like, last week, and It was amazing. She said that basically Sacramento County jail inmates are being starved. They're not given enough to eat because of the profit system, because these companies can make more money, you know, by basically charging prisoners or jail inmates more money for food, the things that you talk about all the time. So it's cruel and unusual punishment, but this reflects our system right now.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's ridiculous. I mean, you know, every time that I called you, every 15-minute phone call, it cost $5 that was taken out of my account. But what's funny about that, Bob, is that $1.75 initial charge and then 20 cents a minute times three, that's $4.75. Or 15 minutes times two, you know, 20 cents, that's $3 plus $1.75, that's $4.75, right? Okay, so how does it even out to $5 instead of $4.75? So they're taking an extra quarter for every telephone call. No shit. Okay? And on top of the fact that at Sacramento County Jail, top ramen soups that they sell here for 35 cents are 99 cents. You know? And to tell you the truth, I don't even think that I need to buy top ramen soups here because they're feeding us well. Okay? I mean, is it gourmet? Compared to Sacramento County Jail, hell yes it is, you know.
Well,
so
Dad,
I'm doing a lot.
What's going on with your trip? Because Joan said that she was preparing two writs of habeas corpus to get you before the judge. She said that you were looking to plead guilty, where she doesn't want you to plead guilty. She thinks you have a great chance of beating the case. So what's going on right now with your case that you could tell us about?
Okay, well, I think that me getting free on the street, since no one else is really advocating the stevia thing, okay, have you located anybody that has cancer that wants to live that probably isn't going to make it without something like an act of God?
No.
No, okay. One of my sons has located somebody with cancer, and I'm trying to get him hooked up with Riley to call this guy to get it going. But the way I look at it, I'm not going to commit any more crimes. And I'll probably, what I'm going to do is try to get somebody to kick it with me on a regular basis that doesn't have a record and they can actually carry a firearm, you know, as a protection. I don't need to have a gun if somebody around me is armed, you know what I'm saying? But, yeah, I think that I could beat that case, but I don't think they want to take me to court. I don't think they want criminals, felons, realizing that you can actually have a gun legally if your life is in danger, you know? And so instead of trying to buck the system, you know what? What do you think, Bob? Should I fight?
Your mother was saying that even if they offered you a plea deal, that there's no guarantee that they would release you anyway. And so, you know, she seems to think that you have a very good chance of beating. I think your case... not being a legal scholar, I from what I understand, you have a very good chance of beating it. Just a question of how long do you want to continue to be, you know, incarcerated. It's got to be very, very difficult. So it's ultimately going to come, you know, to your decision, Dan. But I can't really. It's a very difficult situation.
Well, yeah. Again, you know, it's like pick and choose your battles. You know what I'm saying? I'd rather be free and get out, have stevia, cure somebody's cancer, win the Nobel Prize, lead to all the good things where this is going. You know, the fact is, stevia splits water into a natural gas. Water is a hydrogen gas. Petroleum gasoline is actually a flammable hydrogen gas. And then I discovered a third hydrogen gas. Now, do we have any engines that actually run off of split H2O? Not now, we don't. Tesla, okay? Put it like this. You've heard of eminent domain, correct? When they seize property. Maybe I talked about this last time, but what they should do is fucking outlaw the internal combustion engine and mandate that, you know, Chrysler, Ford, everybody, Toyota, use Tesla technology, which uses a lot. From what I understand, it uses mucho less hydrogen, okay, from what I understand, a little bit of hydrogen is used, but not nearly like petroleum gasoline. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, so, I mean, yeah, it's important to save this planet, you know. And I'll tell you what, fucking America, from the outside looking in, I'm embarrassed to be American. You know, we have how many homeless in our country? Millions. Is it or is it not true that we actually have millions of people that are homeless and hungry across the United States?
It is true.
Okay. And last night at the Oscars, I'll tell you what, it turned out to be 5 million tickets. It turned out to be $55 billion that was generated by the fucking industry last year. $55 billion. Do you realize how much profit was made? And I'm thinking that they probably didn't, you know, do really all that much for people that are homeless and hungry. And,
they probably, in some way, shape, or form, use the commons, use the police departments, use the taxpayer dollars to utilize their movie sets and in turn make billions of dollars, which is what, you know, our current state of capitalism has dissolved into state monopoly capitalism, where these corporations and very wealthy financiers can use the government to turn a profit, and that ultimately suppresses the poor.
Mm-hmm. So how's your life going, Bob? Do you have a good job out there? Is everything, what's up to you?
I'm doing all right, Dan. I'm actually going to be going to Atlanta, Georgia in 2 days. I'm working on my doctorate degree in education. I'm living in New Jersey. I'm living in a trailer right now with a roommate, 7x7 room, similar to what you had. I'm making okay money, still far beneath my education. I'm continuing with the radio show. So, and I lost, since we last spoke, I lost about 7 more pounds. So I'm right down, I'm down to about 263 now.
Okay. You know, so how long did it take you to lose that last 7 pounds?
Probably like a month or two.
Okay. So the way it's going, would you say that it's going to be damn near forever? I mean, what do you want to be, 220?
Yeah, 230, 220 around there, yeah.
Okay. So you're that's a long time.
Yeah.
You think you're going to make it?
I don't know. I got to change some things up, Dan. Maybe have to get reacquainted with stevia because I have, as you've noticed, I have lost weight using stevia before, and it's just a matter of going back to it. So that may be the next thing I try.
Yeah, fuck yeah, you did. You lost 22 pounds in 22 days?
Yep.
Was that it?
Yep.
Like a pound a day? Yeah.
By the way, Jeff Cooper says hello on Facebook.
Okay, can you actually have him contact me? Bottom line, I had a vision that I was going to be rich, and, people might call that crazy, and then I discovered how to get all the toxic shit out of water, so Peachy the fucking better out there cat comes back into perfect health, Bob Johnson's miracle, you know. I mean, if I can bottle a liquid, Bob, that makes it so you don't have to take a shower for 4 to 5 days because you don't stink, no body odor. And then, you know, on average, 6 breast tumors in 4 months, 62 pounds in 4 months, and then even type 2 diabetes vanishes. You think that might make some dollars?
Yes.
Yeah.
How do you want Jeff to contact you? I don't want to give people the payphone number unless you want to, but, you know, I was just kind of skeptical of that.
Yeah, give Jeff the payphone number, you know.
Okay.
See if he can call me. You know, it's like this. I got love for Jeff Cooper. We were friends in high school. Jeff's really, really smart. Jeff's a perfect example of where the fucking system went wrong, you know, because Jeff didn't really get all that great of grades in high school because I think he actually had dyslexia. Very, very smart. You know, he's kicking ass now, you know, taking names.
Yeah.
And, bottom line, people fucking pay dollars to go to movies that are shit. Is that true?
Yes.
Every day, right? Okay. I mean, they can make a true story about my fucking life, and people would pay money, you know? How much money? I don't know, you know? But the fact of the matter is, you know, how many guys, you know, Cedric Figueroa in Louisiana, can you please contact Bob Carson at Carson's Corner and confirm that you told me that I was better than every linebacker on the San Diego Chargers, but since Lou Holtz hated me, I'd have to go up to Canada and wreck it and then come back down to the NFL. And please, validate that I actually told you, fuck football. You know what? I have coaches killed. I'm boxing. You know, I'm done. Done with football. You know, I wouldn't change a thing, Bob. I wouldn't change a thing. I love my kids so much, you know. I mean, if I could have a wish and choose football and still have my kids, yeah, I'd do it in a second, you know. But you can't have that, right? And so it is what it is. And, you know, I love my kids so much that if it was the difference between, like, billions of people dying, you know, or my children, there's no question, you know. There's a massive die-off, and just too bad. It doesn't have to be like that. You know, Bob, have you've read a lot about the Bilderbergs and Illuminati, right?
Yes.
Okay, and have you ever read that they actually have, people have actually supposedly seen reptilians that are aliens on planet Earth?
Well, yeah, 4% of the American population believe that there are aliens that live underneath the Earth. And there's a guy named David Ickes who goes around the country giving speeches and getting paid money that believe that Bill Clinton is one of these creatures.
Okay, but I'm talking about reptilian, like a lizard. Okay, you've heard that?
Yeah.
Okay, now, isn't it true that lizards can live in the desert?
Yes.
Okay, now, if the Illuminati and the Bilderbergers and the 1%ers, okay, have publicly stated that they want to reduce the world's population, I thought it was by 2/3, but actually somebody told me I actually read and then I was confirmed that there's a stone monolith in Georgia somewhere that says 500 million. Are you familiar with that?
No, I haven't heard that.
Yeah, what's that thing in England? Stonehenge? There's some kind of thing like Stonehenge, but it's in Georgia somewhere. And I guess it's written in like 6 or 7 different languages, and it says that they want to reduce the world's population to 500 million. What better way, Bob, than for the rich to actually snooker humanity into using petroleum gasoline, burning up all the water, all right, causing a worldwide global drought, which will kill hundreds of millions to billions, and you know the rich are prepared for it, okay? They've stocked up, you know what, they can go for a long time, and after everybody's dead, they can go back and suffocate a lot of the algae and take it back to, you know, I mean, theoretically, Pop, if we could have our wish, all right, we could actually take Earth back to Eden, you know what, suffocate the algae, make a lot of hydrogen, create water, because, you know, all I have to do is bond it with oxygen, and then use stevia to make all the toxic shit float on top of water as you blend it, you know, so blend all the toxic shit out, you know, create a completely new industry to put people to work, you know, not only across America, they got toxic water all over the planet, all right? So people all over, you know, are drinking pure H2O on one end, you know, spending money. Okay, and then 95% of the profits of, well, if we could actually bottle up a liquid that acts like the fountain of youth, Bob, pure H2O, okay, how much money do you think it would generate globally after it became popular? Take a guess. Think about it.
I mean, it'd probably be incalculable because of, the amount of improvement to our lives, the offsets of costs that result from, you know, poor health and our economic system. So it would just be invaluable.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's 300 million people in the United States, and we have to drink a gallon a day or, you know, approximately, you know, and there's how many billions in China. And maybe it wouldn't be such a good idea to, you know, I mean, if we have too many people, you know, there's going to be a time when if stevia gets as popular as I like to see it, okay, and pure H2O, people aren't going to be dying off like they were, all right? And so there's going to be a point where we're going to have to stop, you know. Do you ever see Star Trek, The Trouble with Tribbles?
No, I'm not a big Star Trek guy.
You're not a Trekkie? All right, yeah, well, I think I might have brought this up before, but, you know, this fucking cute, furry little fuzzball over pie plates and almost fucking clogs up the Starship Enterprise, you know, and that's like humans on a planet Earth now. I mean, we have 13 colonies going to 300 plus million in a little over 200 years. I think, can you imagine the fucking extrapolation when that breeding population of 200 million people that are still having 2, 3, 5 kids, you know, over the next 20, 50 to 100 years? It's astronomical, man. I mean, you've been in New York City, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And isn't it true that, I mean, there's more people living above the first, like ground level, you know, like from the second story above in New York than are living, like, on the ground floor?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's like, you know, people are being sandwiched, you know, and just stacked like fucking anchovies. And, you know, that's going to be, eventually, if we don't curb our population, that's going to be planet Earth. You know what I'm saying? It's going to be a fucking huge parking lot. I mean, it's ridiculous. Bob the Builder, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, how much more do we need? So how are we doing, Bob?
Very, very good. This is a really, really good discussion here, and I think you're absolutely correct, and I'm reading a book about this now. It's called The Enigma of Capital by Professor David Harvey and the Crisis of Capitalism, and it all talks about the consumptuous nature of capitalism, how capitalism, you know, after the 2008 collapse, you had the wealthy that recovered in the United States, but they also recovered in all other countries, in Mexico, in Russia, and now they're making more money. And why is that? It's because capitalism requires constant growth, and in order for constant growth to take place, it has to take place in fictitious markets using fictitious capital, and the whole system is inevitably going to collapse, and that's what we see in America, and that borders exactly on what you're talking about, Dan.
The whole system is designed to collapse, okay? It's a one-way conveyor belt, you know? Everything is supposed to, what's the terminology I'm looking for? It's supposed to be a cycle, you know, like, you know, I mean, you take a dog to the dog park, okay, he takes his shit, you put it in a plastic bag that's 10,000, I mean, it's a 10,000-year plastic bag, right? And that shit, you know, required food to grow from the earth, you know, the dog ate it, and it's not put back into the cycle, into the ecosystem, you know, and fucking 10,000-year-old, like, big lighters, man, okay? How about batteries, you know, like the AA and AAA? Do you realize how many fucking dumps we filled completely just with batteries alone?
Oh, yeah. Our system is built on waste and inefficiency.
Exactly. Okay, that's exactly. Yeah. I bought this up before, but my uncle, you know, he bought all this property around this fucking mansion, and he was going to build other mansions, and there was some obscure cactus that was endangered, and so the EPA came in and shut him down. He couldn't build, and so what he did is he fenced off these parcels, and he bought Beefmaster cattle, okay, which was legal, and the Beefmaster cattle did their thing, and they fucking stomped this cactus the fuck out, all right, to where he made a little money off the Beefmaster cattle, had great steaks, and then 2 or 3 years down the road, he got the build, all right, you know, and he couldn't destroy this native cactus, all right? It's almost like the rich are using us as a military force to fuck this planet up, all right, because they can't do it themselves directly, you know, but they can sell us warning, danger, caution, toxic, will kill you shit, all right,
oh, yeah,
that we're basically forced to use because it's the whole, I mean, are we forced to use it? You know, I don't think people actually think about it. I think people, I truly believe that when it goes down the sink in the drain and it's flushed down the toilet, it's like magically fucking gone, and people don't think about the consequences of where it's going or what they've done. What do you think?
I think you're absolutely right. And you look at what's happening now with the Ukraine and Russia, how the elites in our society are gearing us up for another war, a repeat of the Cold War, which entails massive defense spending and a structural readjustment of our society. That's coming up right now. It's coming down the pike, and it's just, you know, We're destroying ourselves, Dan. It's either reform or revolution, and I pick the latter.
You know what? Well, yeah, we definitely need a revolution, but we're not going to ever be able to accomplish it with guns. It's not going to happen because the rich control all the weaponry. You know, they own the atomic bomb, huh? And do you think they would actually trip one bit for nuking entire cities, you know, to get their way? No, it'd be a cost of doing business. But it could be an economic revolution. And this is where I want to bring in Christina Aguilera. I should have mentioned this at the start because, you know, if somebody actually were to call Christina Aguilera and say, look at Christina, okay, have you ever had 100 orgasms? Would you like to? All right. Well, pretend that the G-spot is like the yin and the yang, and then two fingers in and up to the bottom of the G-spot, and then now, instead of the left hand, or the right hand if you're left-handed, okay, but instead of the offhand pinching nipples or grabbing ass or jacking the fuck off or doing whatever they do, pressing down on top of the belly, below the button, above the bone, actually feeling the inside fingers, you know, pretending the G-spot is the yin and yang, Christina Aguilera and Jennifer Aniston, and who is it, Christina Applegate? Is that the one that was on Married with Children? What's her name?
Yes.
Applegate. Oh, yeah, she's fucking fine. All right. All these hotties, you know, that are near my age. I mean, not Christina Aguilera. She's like 32, but she's fine as fuck, you know. And, you know, fact of the fiction, it's a man-made plague, all right. You realize how many rapists are out there, Bob? Rapists that are getting fucking slapped on the hand by the judicial system in America. I swear to God, they're kicking rapists out. Do you realize this? They're kicking rapists and child molesters out of prison to make room for people that get caught with dope.
Disgusting.
You know that? Okay. Yeah, so a rapist, you know, he'll go rape and rape and rape again, right? And then the women that he rapes many times can't have orgasms like Chris P. that I met. And she had been raped. She couldn't fucking come maybe two times an hour. And I told her I was going to fucking wear her pussy out. I told her a lot of things. And she was like, oh, yeah. I've heard it before. And I wore out, Mom. Okay, she said that she hit fucking triple digits. She forgot. All right, she lost count. Joe H. U. in Worcester, Massachusetts. Have you ever heard of Joe H. U. or heard from him?
No, I never. I know him through you. I tried to look him up. I haven't been able to friend him on Facebook.
Yeah, so anyway, Joe H. U. renamed it to the Levitator, man. You know, because pelvises actually come off the bed and attack faces, you know. I mean, I guess I could, if I had the money, Bob, I could actually make my own fucking workout. You know what I'm saying? Instead of the Pilates workout, it's the violin workout or the Levitator workout, you know, gives you Joe H. U. and his crew, you know, shout out on that.
How do you spell his last name?
I believe it's A-T-C-H-I-E-U.
Okay.
And, yeah, Joe's he's a stud, man. I like that kid. I like his friends. And, you know, maybe they stopped paying attention to me because I didn't win all my fucking fights, you know. And here's the deal. Excuses are like assholes. You know, everybody has one. The fact of the matter is Cal Worsham tried to set me up and did, you know, tried to set me up with Von Lapool, you know, and I broke his collarbone. But then the Harry Gopal fight, I told him I couldn't fight any fucking colder than Von Lapool. And you know what, I mean, I told you this before, but can you imagine the fucking duplicity? I mean, he told me that there were jet heaters all around the cage and there was a tarp that was over the cage, right? And the jet heaters were blowing the fucking heat into the tarp and it was like this warm little cozy environment. Okay?
Yeah.
And he knows that I'm such a fucking sad that when I come up there and I say I'm going to fight, even though it's not like that, I'm not going to back out, you know? So, you know, I sat down. Harry didn't fucking hurt me. He didn't hurt me one time. When he hit me with that uppercut, I didn't get hurt. I was thinking, fuck this. What I should have done is fucking, I should have wrote it out, okay? But I was pissed. I wasn't thinking clearly. And then Aaron, when I get out of here, it'd be cool. I'll fight you fat, man. I'm fucking 250-something pounds now, Bob, you know? And, it's going to be an astronomical before and after, okay?
Yeah,
because
you would actually consider fighting again?
Oh, yeah. I'll fight Aaron Brink, okay? Bob, when I fought Aaron Brink, I was zoned out of my fucking head, okay? It was the first time that when I fought Manipur, okay? And when I fought Manipur and Harry Gopal, I was smoking lots of fucking hash, all right? Against Aaron Brink, that's the first time that I actually ingested 3 teaspoons of hash oil, all right? I was fucking zoned, and I was sitting in the fucking, you know, where they have the fighters before a fight, I don't, you know, the little fucking room. I was sitting, shooting shit, you know. I didn't warm up at all. I didn't stretch out. I didn't fucking, I didn't break a sweat. I didn't do anything, you know. And you're supposed to break a sweat before you go into a fight. So before I'm going in, and here's the deal. I was in shape for that fight, too. And I know for a fact that if you're in shape and you don't fucking warm up before a fight, and then you go out and you exert exercise, you're actually, like, not up and you'll get tired and you'll fuck yourself off, you know? So for the first fucking round, I was thinking, fuck. And then also, you saw me wearing shoes in that fight, right?
Yeah.
Okay, I was under the impression we weren't going to kick and it was going to be a punching match. And that's the only reason why I didn't cover up when I fucking, you know, went underneath his punches and left my face open and he kneed me and broke my nose and shit, you know? And then Aaron, you told me yourself that you were worried because you were hitting me with shots that were fucking fading, ending people, you know, in spine, and it wasn't fazing me, and you were getting tired, and you poked me in the eye, and yeah, so, yeah, the fight, you know,
well,
I'll get
you,
fucking...
Do you want to go outside of Gladiator Challenge, Dan? Because Aaron has been in contact with me. He's supposed to be fighting in King of the Cage in Arizona. There's a good chance that the fight could happen under that banner, which is a very, very big banner. Shannon Rich is my friend. He's the promoter of that organization. Would you consider fighting for King of the Cage?
Sure. You know what? You know what I like to do, Bob? I like to... I'm willing to do whatever it takes to get Stevia and Pure H2O famous, all right? What I like to do is... Here's a simple thing. I like to find somebody that has a cat that's dying of cancer, and what I'm fully prepared to do is get better off a cat that is going to be put to sleep, all right? Lock it in a room, and then get a perfectly healthy cat and lock that in a room too, you know? Keep, you know, feeding them and keep fucking litter boxes and all that shit. And then blend all the toxic shit out of water, give the sick cat the healthy Pure H2O, have that cat come back into perfect health, and then when the soap looks like water again, blend that in tuna fish and have that cat, the healthy cat, lap that up, and I guarantee you it's going to get sick, and I won't kill it, but it will come close, all right, to prove the efficiency, you know, of Pure H2O and the fact that all that toxic shit that we're pouring down the sink. I mean, if you drank liquid Drano, it's going to kill you, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, so what is the difference between pouring 100 million things of liquid Drano and all this other shit into our water and lacing it with toxic shit? It's not just disappearing, all right? It's going into our water, and it's hidden like mistletoe to a tree, and it's there. And that's why more people now are getting sick than ever before. And the fact that the FDA arrested Stevia, that's criminal, man. It really is. The fact that Stevia basically meets all the criteria for manna from heaven, it is what it is.
And then you look at the prescription drugs. The United States of America has 5% of the population of the world, and yet we consume 80% of the prescription drugs. What does that tell you?
Well, you know what? It tells me that America is doped up, okay? We have, America has no concept of enough, all right? You know, how much is enough? And we're under the misimpression, the misconception that we're actually trying to spread democracy throughout the world, when in fact, you know, the CIA and our government is actively undermining other people's attempts at democracy. You know, I mean, that's why Americans don't understand why fucking the Iranians cannot stand us. They hate us because we overthrew their president and installed the Shah, you know? And they don't realize that if every human on the planet actually had the same lifestyle as the United States, we would fucking go through everything and burn this planet up. I mean, like that quick, all right? I mean, if we had a telescope from outer space looking at the Earth, the United States is such a polluter. It's almost like, you know, like bubbly soap coming out from fucking, you know, I mean, you know, all these factories that are pouring thousands of gallons daily of toxic shit in our rivers and streams. You know, people that live near these plants, you know, cancer clusters, all right? The rich, getting richer, okay, off of making us sick and then making it so we can't get national health care, it's fucking criminal.
Yep.
Yeah, it really is.
It's cruel and unusual punishment, and it's based on a waste and inefficiency system. Our healthcare system is inherently wasteful and inefficient because of the profit motive at the center of it.
Yeah. Bottom line, an economy is, I said this before, but, you know, it's the truth. So an economy is like a garden, all right? And instead of water, it takes money to keep it flowing. And you can't have a thriving economy if you have all these billionaires hoarding their money and keeping them in accounts, you know? And bottom line, they could take any billionaire out there, okay? They could take a million, they could take $100 million, they could take $1 billion, and they could start a company and they could put 100,000 people to work, all right? And if that company lost money, they could write that off on their taxes, and that would be a way. It's almost they would be forcing the government to prime the pump by using it as a tax write-off. You know, I mean, it's real simple. But they don't want to do that. And, you know, these companies like, Microsoft and, you know, every company out there that's making these electronic gadgets, they have electronic gadgets that are 10 times better already on the fucking drawing board, okay, to make the shit that we're buying right now obsolete. And the shit that we're buying right now is made out of stuff that you can't recycle, okay, probably 95% of it, you know, maybe not that high, but close to it. And, you know, like I said, it's a one-way conveyor belt. It's like the Bic Leiterman is the best way to describe this, our world's economy, okay? It's a one-time use, and then it's gone, and it's going to sit in a toxic dump and decay and pollute this planet for 10,000 years, all right? When we could be using hemp to make plastic, all right? There's a lot of natural remedies, okay, that could fill the niches that are now being filled by toxics, but they don't want to do that because they can't make as much money, all right?
Yep.
You can't put a patent on a fucking, on a plant, you know?
Yep.
Yeah, Tripp, tell you what, if everybody in America was on marijuana, okay, there would be no fucking fighting, there would be no controversy, you know, there would be no confrontation. People on weed don't fight. You know, like Brian something, I don't know his last name, but he's the Giants fan that was put in a coma and is fucking like brain dead. He's the firefighter, right? Remember?
Yeah, I heard about this. Was that last year?
What's that?
When was that, last year or the year before?
Yeah. It was like a couple years ago, fairly recently. And, put it like this. There was a time, you know what, Bob, it's a trip. There was a time when I wouldn't have given a fuck. You know, I'd probably give him a fuck, even though he's a Giants fan, and I'm a Dodger fan, okay, because he's a firefighter, okay, and most firefighters that I've met are, like, fucking hella cool, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, even though some cops that I met on this day, because I wasn't motherfucking them, are actually pretty cool, right? But firefighters have a completely different, you know, firefighters want to help, cops just want to fuck you up, you know? But it's the American system, you know? These combat sports that divide in dissension, okay? You know, I mean, how many people across America were killed last year because of fights at high school football games?
Yeah, it's becoming a violent affair. By the way, the guy's name
is
Brian Stahl.
Thank you. What's that? I got eight minutes.
All right. The guy's name is Brian Stahl. He's from Santa Cruz. And he was a paramedic and father of two.
Yeah. He sounded like a fucking really cool guy, right? But then again, you know, they make monsters sound like fucking cool guys when they get the shit kicked out. I mean, it's a better story. But, you know, he wouldn't be in the profession that he was in if he was an asshole. And I think it's a tragedy. And I'll tell you what. I don't see, you know, about how much is enough, man. I don't have heart. I should have been a millionaire like three times over. If I'm accused of an attempted rape that I can easily prove that I didn't do, and the priest of the hall at Notre Dame is fucking going to testify for me, and every freshman on the floor is going to testify for me, and Notre Dame's attorneys advise Notre Dame to settle because they don't want that fucking going in front of the jury, and my attorney says, what the fuck is your family doing pulling the money, okay, because Notre Dame will never let this go in front of a jury, client. I'm a millionaire, don't you think, Bob?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, definitely, okay. If I don't quit football, I'm probably a millionaire. I mean, you know, maybe I get hurt, but, you know, it's like the Frank Stamps. I apologize for disparaging you. It wasn't your fault that Lou Holtz gave you my position. You did the best that you could, and you fucking kicked ass, you know. You had like an 8-year career in the NFL, you know what? And if you were some kind of piece of shit, you couldn't have done it. You know, it'd be cool if you got on and told people, because I think, maybe I'm wrong, Bob, but if more people out there that are, you know, haters, if they fucking actually knew that I was the real deal and walked away from fucking football and that I was actually a weapon of mass fucking destruction on the football field, do you think some of those haters would actually change their tune and fucking maybe give Stevie a chance and, you know, join the team? What do you think? Yeah, Frank, if you could fucking tell the truth, that'd be great. You know what I'm saying? I mean, Lou Holtz kicked me off the fucking team. I don't want to get into it. You know, Frank fucking did what he did. Cedric Figueroa, tell the truth. You know, Tim Brown, tell the truth, man. But I fucking put it like this. I didn't catch Tim Brown because I was on the opposite side of the field, but Timmy was fucking running for a touchdown, and I was gaining on him from behind. Okay? You feel me? Put it like this. If it was a 200-yard sprint, if it was a 200-yard, and they have that in the Olympics, right, Bob?
Yes.
Okay, if it was a 200-yard sprint, Tim Brown, I'm catching you, and I'm smoking you at 100 yards and 200 yards, not even close, okay? And I'm white, you know? So, yeah, it'd be cool if some of these people sort of fucking telling the truth. And if they did, you know what? If a Notre Dame, if somebody that I played football with at Notre Dame told the truth, you know, so people that are haters out there might change their tune, I might actually consider, now, might is too wishy-washy, I would actually promise not to go after Notre Dame, you know, and make them look bad, you know, after this hits and it goes famous, when I will actually have the soapbox to stand on and have people listen, you know? What do you think, Bob? Do you think that's a good bargain to make?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Lou Holtz. I'll tell you what, Lou Holtz, I won't tell people the truth that you're a fucking monster if you actually help Stevia get famous, because it does cure. And you know what, Lou? If the truth got out about you, your grandkids would be embarrassed to have your last name straight up. You know, it is what it is. And, you know, so I guess... You know, all these fucking people that are calling up Dana White and Dana White and what it was fucking Dana White, Don King, you know, the University of South Florida, you know, terrorist threatening. So TMZ fucking smuts me up globally. What's that dude's name? Harvey Weinstein?
The guy from, TMZ.
Yeah, Harvey. Bottom line.
Harvey Levin.
Glenn. Harvey Levin. Okay, yeah, Harvey Levin. I promise you that when Stevia making Pure H2O generates money and I'm rich, because you guys smutted me the fuck up, okay, and set my program back and actually caused more death, you know, and brought this planet a little bit closer to fucking, you know, the end of the days, you know, instead of helping me forward, you know, what I'm trying to do, I will use money and I will attack you and your fucking family, all right? Straight up, you know, I think that it would be kind of funny, and TMZ's competitors, because there's people like TMZ, right, that do the same thing, but they're not. Isn't that true?
Yes.
Okay, they got competitors. I think they'd think it was fucking hilarious, man. You know, money buying property next to Harvey Levin, you know, and, you know, his family and his coworkers and shit, and putting people in next to him that hate their fucking guts. You know, and that's one of the things that I told the police, you know, after I told the cop, that I should have shot his punk ass when he walked up. And should have, that's not a fucking threat. That's a past tense clause, correct?
Yep.
There you go, all right? And then I was pissed, and I couldn't keep my mouth shut, and I told him, you know, it's not a threat, but I'll buy the property next to your parents, and I'll put people in as our neighbors that crash property values, ruin their quality of life, fucking make them miserable so they hate your fucking guts. And that's what I'm being charged with a 422 criminal threat for. You know what the moral of that story is, Bob? Men weren't meant to rule, man. Testosterone fucks shit up. It really, really does, you know? And isn't it true, okay, from all the people you know in your life, men generally fuck families up, and if it wasn't for the women, okay, keeping the family together, it would really turn to shit?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Look at America, look at the world, you know, overpopulation in a constant state of battle, and that's what men do. You can't fucking take a male dog to the dog park and have it not either get into a fight or have it to actually prevent some kind of fight, because that's what they do. Alright, and females, they never get into that fucking problem. Never. They just want to have fucking fun, do their thing, yada yada. And I think that people should wake the fuck up. So, anybody out there that's actually a fan, what I'd like you to do is contact Christina Aguilera, contact any fucking famous, Jennifer Aniston, I don't give a fuck who it is, some hottie, and just say, look, would you like to have 100 orgasms? Or have you ever had 100 orgasms? You know, would you like to? Tell them about the violin. And sooner or later, it's going to catch on, you know? I mean, what do you think? Why do you think it hasn't caught on, Bob? What do you think the reason for that is?
I think there's too much consolidation of media in America. It's everything requires money, requires capital. There's a bunch of different things.
You know, on my play, you know, the play, when I catch that tailback diving for a touchdown and I get fired for it, what's really scary, Bob, is that the sportscasters, all right, I'm trying to think of the name of one of them. He was a linebacker at fucking Penn State, as a matter of fact. Jack Ham. I think Jack Ham was one of the guys up in the booth. They didn't even mention my fucking name, okay? There must have been a gag order, okay, not to. And you read the Hunger Games, correct?
I saw the movie.
Okay, you saw the movie. So you're familiar with the concept, all right, of the Capitol, you know, and the control of everything. Okay, that's like a capital type thing, man, straight up. Because if Jack Ham actually does his fucking job and mentions my name, you know, maybe Lou Holtz can't fucking hold me back, you know, because people would have known who the fuck I was, you know. It is what it is. Can't go back. But that's indicative of, I make that play, man, and it was either ABC or CBS, you know. They don't even mention my name, man. You know, it's like, wow, to have the fucking networks put a blacklist on me because Lou Holtz did, you know. It's like, what the fuck? So anyhow, I'm not really sure. If I would have prepared for this, I would have fucking had something written down to, like, wrap this up on a really high note. I'm kind of tired. It's been a great talk. And, you know, I hope people out there listen. Get some stevia if you're doing cocaine, all right? Don't get arrested and don't spend $600 for... Do you know that cocaine costs $600 to $800 an ounce when you can actually buy an ounce of stevia at Trader Joe's that's stronger than cocaine? Okay, even that shit, you know, and you can get it for $10? What the fuck? You know, if you're fat, all you have to do is drink stevia water all day. You can be Skinny Thin. You know, a stevia sweet America, stevia ice cream, candy bars, soda pop, all right, is a virtual health utopia. And can you afford your own stevia, Bob, because you're working or not?
Yes, I got to get back on the regimen. What would you real quickly, what would you recommend that I do to start off?
Okay, depends on, okay, for the best stevia on the planet, emperorsherbologist.com. That's EmperorsHerbologist, emperorsherbologist.com, and they have by far the best stevia on the planet. But it's about twice as expensive as the decent stevia, okay, that you can get at ZNaturalFoods.com. You know, the ZNaturalFoods.com, that's about the same quality that you're going to get at Trader Joe's. It's the same quality. ZNatural Foods is what did my uncle's miracle, right? 2 pounds of that shit over 4 months, you know, 62 pounds, 6 breast tumors, and type 2 diabetes gone, you know. And I think ZNatural Foods actually has a deal for 5 pounds for like 150 to 174, if my memory serves, all right? Depending on what you can afford, if you can't, you know, get in touch with Riley, you know. Do you have his number?
Yeah, I do, yep.
Okay, yeah, because he can send you a, you know, COD, you know. Please do that. Either you get it or from me, or you get it yourself. But, you know, congratulations. You know what? You've done more than most. Okay, because you were like 320 pounds, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, okay. So you lost fucking 50 pounds, but now you're to the point where this is like where it's, this is like the fourth quarter. This is like 2 minute warning, okay?
Yep.
You know? I mean, this is what's the harder than ever to get done. Yeah. So if you use stevia, you'll go down like it's fucking magic. And people are like, oh my God, look at Bob Carson, you know?
Yep.
And, yeah, so you promise to do that?
Yeah, I'm going to get back on it.
Okay, Bob Carson, do you promise to either get it yourself or to get it from Riley?
I will get it myself or get it from Riley, yep.
Okay, thank you very much. That's a fucking, that's beautiful, man. You know, if you can have Jeff Cooper, yeah, get in touch with me.
Yes.
Give Jeff my number. I don't have the address in front of me at this place, but, you know, we can work it out. And Jeff Cooper. Think about bottling up a liquid, okay, that brings a 17-year-old cat that's fucking sneezing blood bubbles, all right, and skeleton thin and pissing the bed, and the vet has already taken the money, all right, he's accepted the money because that cat is better off dead, he's going to put it to sleep, and then, you know, bottle up a liquid that you can blend in tuna fish, right, and that cat will lap it into fucking perfect health, all right, and then you start drinking it, and you go lean and shredded, all right, to where you're looking better than you did when you were in high school, and you don't stink for 4 or 5 fucking days. Bottle that shit up, partner, and none of our families ever have to work a day in their life, right?
When should he call you?
What's that?
What's a good time to give you a call?
You know what? It's hard to say. Anytime, because we're pretty much all around. There's not much going on, man. You know, so, yeah.
All right, I'll give him the number, and I'll just say anytime. Okay.
Cool.
All right, I just sent it to him now.
What's that?
I just sent him the number now.
Okay, fantastic, Bob. I appreciate everything you've done. You know, too bad when you came out it didn't work out differently because you'd be skinny already. It is what it is. We can only go forward. And,
there's an opportunity here. I just found out the last couple of days that my family might inherit some property in New York City, an apartment, a co-op that's worth a lot of money, and there could be a chance where I would go down there and live. And then, you know, you're always welcome to stay with me. That'd be great. Dan Quinn living in New York City. It's like, you know, it's phenomenal. It would be something for the ages.
I tell you what, yeah, I think that me on weed, okay, and stevia in New York would be a good thing if I had somebody kicking it with me that was strapped, because there's a lot of fucking New York, that would be way too easy for for an entity like a corporation, you know, or whatever, that didn't like Dan Quinn, you know, and what he's doing with the stevia curing cause, to take me the fuck out. Isn't that true? I mean,
yeah.
You know, if it can happen to John Lennon, you know, yeah, it could happen to Dan Quinn. So I'd do that if Joe H.U. or one of his friends could fucking kick it with me and they could be strapped and be my bodyguard. Yeah, I'd do that in a second.
Wow, that's awesome. Hey, listen, this is great that we can get in touch with you. Would you be willing to do some live interviews where we can get some call-ins?
Definitely.
All right, so then in that case, what we'll have to do is we'll have to come up with a time, or one time in the next couple weeks or so, where I could give you a call and I could schedule a show and I can call you right from the show and we could do that live.
All right. Cool.
Perfect.
Cool.
Go ahead.
What time is right now?
It's 1 o'clock, 1:10 a.m. Eastern time, and I don't know what time it is. Put 11 o'clock there.
Yeah, well, I gotta lock it up here like any time. I haven't been told to get the fuck off the phone yet, but 10 o'clock is our bedtime, which is cool, you know.
Okay.
Yeah, I feel like I'm 12 years old, but so it's all good. You know what? There's people that are living on the fucking streets that are starving, that are fucking dying of, you know, exposure and hunger, all right? And that's not happening to me. And I actually will want to be, no. Am I where I'm going to end up? No. I'm going to end up hopefully fulfilling that vision that I had about, you know, getting fucking a lot of money and then helping everybody that needs it out. And stevia, making purees too, is the key to that. And Bob Carson melting the last 50 pounds of whatever off your body using stevia is a good way to get the ball rolling. So thank you for promising to do that, Bob, and I will call you tomorrow.
All right, good. We'll do it. Thanks a lot, Dan.
All right. Take care, Bob. Thank you.
Bye-bye.